So let's get started here. In Parshas Vayechi, of course, we have the story of the death of Yaakov and the burial. And in that context, the Torah tells us that there was chanota, and I guess you translate it to English as embalming the dead or mummifying the dead. And the question is, does this have any halachic ramifications as far as issues like autopsies and taking out parts of the body after death? We'll start with Rabbeinu Bachai. He says, Inyan Chanota, it says, Vayichnatu Arofim, Shayimarachin also bibsavim vizonin. They use certain chemicals and certain spices. And they used to do an entire pharmacological preparation. Ke'inyan shekosuv v'asa melech. And we find this in other cases, not just in the case of Yaakov. Vayishkiveu b'mishkav asher maleb samin v'zonim erkochim kimerkachas maisa. V'zeh hoya achar rechitza. So first they wash the body, and then they injected different kinds of chemicals into the body. Apparently they had the science in those days. I don't think we have the science, but they did. Umasha Omar Vayichnitu Shetsivu Lasos Kane Kihoyu Bikiyan Bechokmas Hateva Velo Shigu Arofin Begufo. In other words, Yosef gave the command because he had full reliance on their science, that they would be able to perform this without making any mistakes. The Zohar has a discussion as to whether or not this process of chanita was common in those days, or it was designated only for the kings. And the Zohar records a dialogue about this. And one of the Talmidei Chachamim asked the question. It says, "Vayitzav Yosef es avodav es harofim lachnot es oviv, vayichnu to harofim es Yisrael." He says, "Salkedait, do you really believe that kishar b'nei nosha havi chanitada, that for every person, every ordinary person, they did such a chanata? Begin urchahu, if you're going to tell me that this was normal procedure, standard for everyone, haksiv vayomas Yosef, and Yosef was at a certain age when he died, and then it says vayosem ba'aron b'mitzrayim, and halo azla ime b'orcha. You know, as they gave the malach and the kings a very special. Respectful procedure after they died, and therefore the next paragraph the Zohar establishes al orcha de malchim inun, but rather this was something that they did on behalf of the kings. Now exactly what the procedure was, we're going to try to see in the Abarbanel in just a minute. But what was the purpose? Begin in order to lekayim gufayu, to make sure that the body would remain intact, and chantilon b'meshach rabos, they use it all sorts of meshichos, all sorts of ointments and oils, and besamim, and they had to do this over the course of 40 days. The Zohar says it was a whole process, and that we derive also from our parasha. But in any event, he claims that this was a procedure that was designated and reserved for the kings. What exactly was the procedure? Says the Abarbanel, Vayitzav Yosef es avodav harofim shayu avodav lefi shayu noeg b'taksise melochim. Since Yosef was part of the royalty, therefore he had this ability that he could command the Rofim b'melechas chanota, And again, the Abarbanel supporting what we saw before, the Zohar HaMiyucheres LeMolochim, which was designated for the kings. V'heim Chantu Es Yisrael. So they implemented this procedure for Yaakov Avinu. And what exactly happens? Now, I'll be honest with you, I never thought that they take parts of the body out of the... I didn't know that. I guess everybody else knows that. I just didn't know that. But now I know it. The Abarbanel says, Achanoti hotzos hamoach. They take out the brains, va'lev, va'kaved, and the heart, and the liver. V'chein hame'ayim, hamerirus betoch haguf. Anything that has, like, bile in it. So they took out the intestines. V'yimshichu haguf mibayis u'michutz b'sheven afarsimon. Then they do this meshicha, in which they completely cover the body with these different types of special oils that give us a fragrant smell. And vayimlach hakerbayim mibayis u'michutz mimine besomim hamisyabshim lachluchus haguf. It seems that in order to achieve their goal, they had to dry up the body. V'tzarech b'chol yom lahachluf habesamim, that for a certain period of time you have to change the besamim. You put it in and then you take it out. And this is a whole procedure. Fine. I'm not going to go into all the gory details here. Now, there's an interesting case of Chanota, at least according to some Mefarshim, with regard to Shaul HaMelech. And the Pasuk says that after Shaul was killed, Vayakumu kol Ish Chayil, Ish Chayil means the Giborim, Vayelchu kol Alayla, till they finally got to Shaul's body, Veskvias Bonov, Michomas Beis Shon. And then it says, Vayavou Yavesha, Vayisrifu Osam Sham. And if you take this Pasuk literally, before you look into the Targum Yonasan, you get the impression that they actually burnt the bodies. But the Targum Yonasan seems to interpret it differently. And towards the end of this paragraph, he says, V'kolo alayin k'ma, the colon, these are different types of chemicals, al malchiyot tamon, on the melech, meaning on Shaul. So if you take a look in the Radak, the Radak is bothered by this Targum Yonasan because the Pasuk says, Vayisrufu Osa. What's the Sreif over here? So he says, V'yefsha shayadaito k'moshe kasu rabboseinu zal. This is a Gemara, I believe, in Masechta Sanhedrin. Sorfin al ha-melochim. That there's a certain process that after the king dies, they burn. What do they burn? Mayim sorfin aleihem. It says mitasam, uklei mitasam, klei tashmishan. So we're talking about different objects that were used by the king during his lifetime. And I guess in order to guarantee that no one would use these objects, sort of like usurping them from the Malchus, because now that they were dedicated to the Melech, no one was allowed to use them, even after the death of the Melech, so they would burn it. And it seems that this was standard practice even amongst the Knanim, even back in the time of the Amorim. There's a whole sugi in the Gemara there, if I remember correctly, about whether we're allowed to imitate this process. And I think the Gemara establishes that really this was a Jewish process initially, and the Goyim were just imitating the Jews. So the first possibility, Radak says, that the Sreifa here is referring not to the bodies, but rather to the objects, to the wardrobe, and so forth. Oh, or perhaps Daito, according to the Targum Yonasan, the Sreifa is on the Besomim. In other words, in order to use these various chemicals and these various spices for the purpose of Chanota, they first had to subject them to a heating process. And after they were heated up, then you could use them. V'tochein, and now he gives a third possibility, Lefaresh, ki habasar sarf, that as we saw in the Abarbanel, they first took out the innards of the body, whether it be the different parts that we discussed earlier, and what did they do with them? They would burn them. Why didn't they bury them? You know, the law is that if a person is buried, he's buried also with his any body parts. That's something that the Chevra Kadisha here in Israel unfortunately have to face after terrorist attack, Rahman al-Itzlan, or after wars. But here, L'Ratzu L'Karvam, why? Because he says that these body parts were already infested with worms in Tolayim. Velo ein ze derech kavod. It's not a derech kavod to handle these parts and then bury them. It's already, so to speak, decomposed. But rather, sarfu abasar, and what was left with was the atzamos, and that's what they buried. Now, if you take a look at the Tosfos Yontif, he's also aware of the fact that, according to Targum Yonason, what happened with the body of Shaul is chanata. And I'm going to leave out the Tosfos Yontif for now. Maybe we'll come back to it a little bit later. The print is a little bit small for me. Let's take a look at this. This is the most important source that I wanted to share with you. Because as I said at the outset, this story of the chanata of Yaakov has halachic implications, because again, we're taking out body parts in order to achieve this chanata. So the Rashba was asked the question, Ruvain Tziva B'shas P'tiraso. Now at this particular point, the questioner is not dealing with the issue of chanata per se, but rather the issue of what we call Likud Atzamos, which means taking the body out of its grave in order to rebury it and inter it in a different place. And normally we don't allow that, but in this case, Reuven, before he died, he left a will and testament, She Yisrael Sol Likbar Sol Mokom Kivras Avosim, that he died at a distance from the burial place of his fathers, his forefathers, and therefore he asked that he be buried together with them. But unfortunately, on that particular day that he died, they were too busy or whatever have you, and they weren't able to do so. So on a temporary basis, they buried him where he died. And now the children want to take him out of the kever and bury him b'kivras avosav. However, what's the issue? Mipnei she'ef shal lisa oso Machmas Hefseid HaBosar. As I guess, in the process of taking the body from place to place, some of the organs of the body would be lost. V'reichon nodef, and not only that, it's beginning to really smell badly. Adshisakel HaBosar, because as long as the Bosar is still, partially in the process of decomposition, but it's not totally decomposed, then there's a terrible odor. That's what I'm learning now with Seth the Shabbos about Hotzah, whether you're allowed, if there's an Isur Muktzah and so forth, to take the body out. Ha'im muta liten es kol gufo sid. They could somehow pour the white, what's it called in English, sid?
Lime.
And completely cover the body, and what will they gain by that? Lemaher ha'ikul, that speeds up the process of decomposition. So there's a double question here. Number one, iika bizayin b'kach, is that called bizayin ames to speed up the decomposition? Inami, and furthermore, mishum tzar, they're actually causing pain to the person who passed on. How do you know you're causing pain to the person who passed on? Because the Gemara tells us in Brachos, kosher rima lemes kimachat bibsar chai, that when the worms crawl in, that's painful as in the case of a live person, of sticking him with needles. So now by doing this process of sid and speeding up the ikul, that's going to be painful for the deceased. And this tshuva of the Rashba is quoted in all the poskim. This is the sort of like the landmark tshuva. He says, "Kol ki hai in this situation, shosim la'akel b'sara mehera kadesh liso so le'makom shetziva. if you're speeding up the process of decomposition for the purpose of bringing him to the place where he asked us to bury him, so it's necessary in order to achieve his goal, the goal of the Niftar, Ein kan mishum bizoyim. The Ein kan mishum tzar. So, 2 points in the Rashba. Point number one is that this is not called bizoyim because we're doing it adarab lechvodo shalmes. That's what he wants. And moreover, there's no tzar here. She'ein bosar mes margish beizmol kolshkein besit. If you cut into the body of the dead, the deceased doesn't feel any pain whatsoever. And how much more so if you're just covering him with lime. So again, I don't know exactly how the Rashba is going to interpret the Gemara in Brachos. Maybe the Gemara means that this is part of the process of punishment that God meets out after the person dies, but it's not that the mess actually feels the pain of the worms going into his body. And then the Rashba writes, v'chanutim, how do they do the process of chanota, which we saw already by Yaakov Avinu, is korin oson, they actually rip open the body, motzian me'ehem, they remove the intestines, and the enkan lo mishum tzar v'lo mishum bizoyon. You know, it's chanota becomes the paradigm for the tshuva of the Rashba. How do I know that you're allowed to tamper with the body of the dead and even increase and speed up the process of ikul? I know it because since it's not a bizoyan lames, but rather a covered lames, as in the case of chanota, where in chanota they actually remove body parts, and all this is done with covered shalmes, and we don't worry about bizoyan, we don't worry about tsar. So here too, when it becomes necessary in order to transport the body from place to place, and inter the body in the Mokum Kivras Avosov, that's Lichvodo. Therefore, we're certainly allowed to do that. And if we can speed up the process and facilitate that by pouring Sid over the body, that's what we do. And the Ramah actually codifies this in Yoredeya, in the laws of Avelus and Kvura. As a general rule, the Mechaber says, Ein mo licha mes mi ir sheyesh ba kvoros le'ir acheres. We don't remove a body from one place to the other. The only heter that the Mechaber recognizes is to take a body that's buried in Chutzlitz and buried in Eretz Yisrael, because burial in Eretz Yisrael is a very big deal. And by the way, that itself is a topic to be studied, because I'm not sure exactly whether or not everybody agrees that we should take out bodies from Chutzlitz and rebury them in Eretz Yisrael. That's not so simple. But the Mechaber seems to be okay with it. Are there any other circumstances in which we allow taking the mess out of its Mokum Kvura for reburial? Let's say within Eretz Yisrael or from one part of Chutzlitz to another. Says the Ramah, yes. Oh, another case where you're allowed to do this is Shemolichon Oso L'Mokom Kivros Avosov, that we want to bury him in his family burial plot. So on a temporary basis, they had to bury him in a different burial place, a different city even, but we're allowed to take him. V'yemtziva L'Olicho M'Mokom L'Mokom. Or for example, there were those Shetziva L'Kovro B'Beso, they had a little mini cemetery in the backyards, Velo Beves HaKvaros Shomin Lo. In other words, there's no absolute rule, Chok Velo Yavra, that a person has to be buried in a cemetery. If it's his desire to be buried in his backyard, then we can accept that. Now, in the case where we're moving him from one place to the other, because that was his last will and testament, says the Ramah, Muto Litein Sid Olav, you can actually pour lime over the body, kidei li'akel ha'bosar mayer, to speed up the process of decomposition, lo'licha l'mokom asher tziva. So this Rashba that we saw in the Tshuvos is brought down la'alocha by the Ramah. And again, for me personally, this is a big pella, because I never thought that the halacha would allow us to tamper with the body after death, and especially to speed up the process of decomposition. But the answer is, as a general rule, we certainly wouldn't allow it, but for covered a mess, we're going to allow it. And we saw in the case of Hanato that we even took body parts out of the corpse, and we did so l'chvodo shel mes. Now, one of the most important svarim about burial and avelus in the contemporary world is the Gesher HaChayim. I'm sure you're all familiar with it. His name was Tokachinsky. He was a sort of Sgan Rosh Yeshiva here in Yerushalayim in Eitz Chaim Yeshiva with Rabbi Zalman Meltzer. And to a certain extent, amongst Ashkenazim, he's like the final word on avelus. Again, many, many books have been written since the time of the Gesher HaChayim, but and especially in the English language, but they're all to some extent based on the Gesher HaChayim. Now, he has a whole section here on Chanita, and the assumption that he's operating with is that it's possible, even in our time, if we had the right guidance, to embalm the dead. And he's just asking another question. Are we in favor of it? Now, he's not questioning the scientific reality that we can do such a thing. He wants to know, should we encourage it? Now, we saw in the Abarbanel and earlier in the Zohar that this process of Chanata was reserved for Malachim, for the kings. And therefore he says, Hisvakhu bazeh gdolei achronim gdolei rabbonim ador acholif. In the previous generation, there was a tremendous controversy, an uproar about this issue. And those who were conservative and were not in favor of Chanata, it was for two reasons. Two chashoshos, as he says. Number one, he says that baharbe chanotos, very often when they do this procedure, motzitzim, I'm going to skip a few words and come back, as dama. They actually extract the blood out of the corpse. How do they do so? B'mash'eva michanit, with some sort of mechanical tool that sucks out the blood. And he says it even goes further. We're not allowed to take blood out of a dead body. We even bury the blood if it was removed, if it came out of the body. He says, Lefrakim otziim gamis kirbov. They take out some parts of the innards. How can we allow this to go on? Now again, in the case of Yaakov Avinu, says the Abarbanel, that's exactly what they did. So somehow this v'nafochu over here, the halacha has changed. Or alternatively, this is a special heter from Melech. What's the second reason for those who are opposed to this? Shainis shal yidei ze gormim shis acher ikol abosar. He says that in the process of chanata, by covering the body with all these agents and all these besamim, it slows down the process of decomposition. I don't know what he means by slowing it down. I mean, if the chanot is successful, it completely freezes the process of decomposition. The body is meant to stay intact. So what's so terrible about that? He says, tachlis ha-kvura, the whole purpose of kvura, is shabosa yis'akel, is to allow the body to decompose, and what's left in the kever is just bones after this process is complete. So again, everything that he says here in terms of those who are opposed to Chanata seems to be the exact reason why we want to have Chanata. And yet he's saying that according to this opinion of the opponents, Chanata is not something that we can allow to go on. First of all, because they may overstep their bounds and remove parts of the body. And secondly, because it's going to delay the process of equal, and the whole purpose of Kvura is to facilitate the process of equal, because equal abasar is one of the ways in which a person achieves kapara for the sins that he may have committed during his lifetime.
Isn't there a certain klal, a certain tzaddikim, that their bodies do not decompose?
Right. Well, that's even without chanot. Maybe maybe we could have a discussion about that. You know, they were such tzaddikim that they didn't need the ikol habasar at all. And again, you might argue that Yaakov Avinu didn't need the ikol habasar, and therefore you could have accepted chanata. But on the other hand, when he says that you're not allowed to remove the innards, I mean, the whole process of chanata, as we saw before, was to remove the inner parts. Let's just go on and see if we can get more of a handle on this. He writes, "Hanoguk shebemokum shetzrichim laolach hasames liracheres mahalach yom yomayim bimei chom." He says that there is a heter for chanata, and the circumstances are such that we have to remove the body from its kever here, and we have to travel with the body a distance, which of course is going to remind us of what goes on El Al plains today, you know, is osim pula malachutit ke'en chanita. He says we're allowed to do something similar to chanita. And why is that? Because we don't want to let the body rot and smell, because then it's going to be almost impossible to carry it to another place. Shemesimim bo. He says, wait, I think I skipped something. Just one second. He says that they use this mechanical process similar to chanata, and mesimim bo, what they inject into the body, either through the nose or through the tabar, through the belly button, minei afarsimon mesamim, different types of drugs. But the ein motzi and es dama, they have to be very careful not to remove the blood. We don't remove blood. So basically, the kind of chanata that he's permitting in the cases where we need the chanata desperately is without removal of any part of the body. It's almost like a temporary kind of chanata. It's only going to cover me for the short period of time that I need. For example, if someone's an American, we want to bring him to Israel to bury him in Yerushalayim. For example, my father died in New York and he was buried in Har Menuchot. Azai, what they do is motzitzin b'mash'eva mechanit me'adam ve'halach luchas. He says that if it's absolutely necessary, you can remove some of the dam and some of the liquids that are causing all these problems. Right, there are all sorts of rotten liquids inside the body that are causing horrible smells, but we're not allowed to take any of the innards out of the body. What we're allowed to do is inject into the body, in order to cause it to get hard, all sorts of drugs and chemicals as necessary. And then he goes on, he says that any liquids that they removed, and certainly blood, they should put it into a container and send it on the El Al plane together with the body. That also should be buried. Even though he says that according to most poskim, you don't have to bury the dam. Why? Because we only bury the dam that came out of the body before the person died. After the person died, any blood that comes out is not chayev in kvura. I mean, for that you have to know the laws of kvura. But nevertheless, heather mitzvah, we want to be machmir, and therefore we're going to bury even the dam. So just to summarize, what we have here are three points. Point number one is that in the case of the chanot of Yaakov Avinu, they remove the innards from the body. Point number two is that the Rashba says that in a case where you have to take a person, lichvodo shalmes, and move him from one place to another, you're allowed to cover the body with a chemical that will speed up the process of ikul, and all this is done lichvodo shalmes, and the Rashba's basis for that is chanata, and this is accepted in the Ramban Shulchan Aruch. Then we jump to the halacha in what I call the contemporary svarim, the Gesher HaChayim, and all of a sudden we see that we're very, very conservative about the chanata. When I mean the chanata, the Ersh class chanata, we don't allow removing parts from the body, and if absolutely necessary, what we're going to allow is to inject certain chemicals into the body, and perhaps we can allow, if necessary, removing some of the dam and the lachluchas, which should be shipped off with the body for burial. So there's a great, great gap here between the chanota in Parshas Vayechi, the way the Abarbanel understood it, and the Tosfos Yontov also understood it that way, and the halacha lemaisa, because the Rashba accepts the chanota of Yaakov Avinu and builds on that, and certainly allows certain things when necessary, lefodu shel mes, which otherwise would not be allowed. But yet, paradoxically, we're not going to accept this. And the Maratz Chayos in his Tshuvas, I think, touches upon this problem. He says, "Hare ra'inu dechantu es Yaakov." Shouldn't we derive, therefore, an obligation of chanota, or at least, at the very least, a heter, some sort of permission for chanota sameisim? And he says, "Ulididan," and yet for us, meaning in terms of normative practical halacha, nachonchu, the exact opposite. Hachanita asura. Why don't we allow chanita? Because every chanota entails taking parts out of the body, mishum nivol, and that's called nivol ames. We're not allowed to disrupt the body. Tetzrichim l'nateach evarim. We're going to have to cut up some of his organs in order to achieve this chanota. V'chi tema debat kinen lei haminavil. And he goes on to say that, with quoting a whole long list of tshuvas, that we're not allowed to tamper with the body in any way, shape, or form. And by the way, I would assume that according to the Maratz Chayos, even what we saw in the Geshra Chaim to remove the dam, even that would be prohibited. And what about Yaakov Avinu? So he writes, Ein lemeidim Yaakov. Again, I don't know what he does with the Rashba, because I think the Rashba was building himself on Yaakov. But Ein lemeidim Yaakov, and they show you Kodem Matan Torah. We have a principle called Nitna Torah v'Nischad Shalocha, and any process of removing parts of the body after death for the purpose of Chanota was permissible on, shall we say, an intuitive level, meaning, you know, in terms of our intuitive, moral, ethical sense, you know, we can justify removing the inner parts for the sake of Chanota. But in you know, Nidna Torah and Ischach Halacha, we have Halacha, and Halacha is that we're not allowed to take any parts out of the body. Now, when you say you're not allowed to take any parts out of the body, this leads us to, again, I'm going to try to see if I can tie myself, our second issue for today, which is autopsies. Now, autopsies, as you and I know, could be done for any number of different reasons, but perhaps ethically, on the highest level, an autopsy is a way of training medical students so that they'll be able to deal with patients and life and death situations because they have that experience. And here we have a tosis in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin says that we put to death a murderer. And the Gemara says, well, what do the Eidim testify? How do we know that he's guilty of murder? So the Gemara says that he killed him with a knife. So the Gemara says, well, that doesn't mean he killed him. Why? Because there's a halacha called a treifa. And perhaps the victim of this murder was a treifa. The law is that a horig is a treifa is potter. So the Gemara says, zil bas aruba. This is going to be the basis for what we call aruba the lesser kamon. That most people walking with 2 feet on this globe are not treifas. So the Gemara says, no, I don't know if I can prove and establish the law of Rove, what's called Ruba de Lesser Kamon, based on the fact that we put the murderer to death, and we don't assume, we don't raise the possibility that the Nirtzach was a Trefa. Maybe there's a different thing. But Kinanle, we check the body of the deceased, and we make sure that there's no B'makom Sayef Nekev, there was no hole in the body, when the sword that he killed him with entered into the body. So the Gemara says, no, that isn't even a possibility. Hokam minval. Because if you were to check the body after death, and do some sort of post-mortem operation, then that's a violation of Nivla Nes. V'chitemen, maybe you'll say, Mishum Ibud Neshama. In other words, now the murderer's life is on the line, and we could possibly save him by doing this operation, this autopsy. So the Gemara says, you know what? You're right. In theory, we should be able to do this kind of autopsy, cut open the body and see if there were any inner organs that were damaged, if this victim was a treifa, but we're not going to do that for another reason. And that is because we'll never be able to really clarify anything. The bedika will not help clarify the suffix. If you're willing to validate the possibility, halachically, that maybe the victim was a treifa, then the bedika is not going to help you. All the autopsies in the world are not going to help you. Why? Because when you look at that organ that was destroyed by the murderer, let's say killed him by knifing him in the heart, you don't know. Maybe there was a nekev in the heart, and maybe he was a treifa, and the autopsy is not going to show anything. But theoretically, the Gemara says, if the autopsy would have been successful, we would have been allowed to do so, overriding the Nivla Nes, but for the sake of saving the life of the Rotzeach. It comes out, Rabbi Osai, that Nivla Nes is a very severe Isur, so much so that the only way that we can permit it is if we can somehow save human life. And that leads me to the question of autopsies. In a medical environment, the autopsy is necessary for ultimately saving lives. And if you'll fast forward, depending upon how many pages you printed out here, to page number 3, this is the world famous tshuva of the Noda B'Yehuda. Any literature that you'll ever read about autopsies is always based on this Noda B'Yehuda. And the question that was asked to the Noda B'Yehuda by none other than Harav HaMufla VaMuflag Rabbeinu Lev Fishlam. Does everybody know who he is? I don't know who he is. But in any event, he is a Rav Mufla UMuflag. And he tried to convince the Noda B'Yehuda to allow, to permit autopsy. What was the case? It happened in London. We're going back about 300 years ago, and somebody fell ill with Evan Bekiso, some sort of a, I guess you call it kidney stones or something of the like. Maybe, what's that other part of the body? Not the kidneys, the...
Gallstone,
or maybe, I'm thinking of another part, what's it called? The appendix, maybe in the appendix. And normally there was a standard procedure, a standard kind of surgery, even back in the day, and they would be able to, you know, remove the stones. But unfortunately, because of that particular situation, the patient died. And now the scholars in the city have written to me, meaning this Rav Leib, this question whether or not they're allowed to do an autopsy in order to see exactly why this surgery was unsuccessful. What was the nature of the patient? What was his ailment? Kidei l'slamid mizeh banhagas harof. So we can learn from this how to guide other surgeons mikan lab in the future of yikre mikra kazeh if someone else comes down with this ailment. So we'll know exactly how to do the surgery and we'll successfully save someone's life. And he goes on to say that even though there's an isur of nivla nes, but nevertheless, for the sake of hatzolos nefashos, down the line we'll be able to save human life, should we override the isur of nivla nes? And the truth is, Rav Osai, when I read the Shaila, I thought without even blinking, I thought for sure the answer was going to be it's mutter. And the Shoel, this Rav Leib Fishel, he brings the Rashba. The Rashba says that if a person leaves a last will and testament that he wants to be buried by the Kivrei Avosov, we're allowed to dig him up out of the grave, we're allowed to even put Sid on his Basar, I mean, that's a pretty heavy thing to tamper with the body in that way and speed up the process of decomposition until what's left is bones, and yet the Rashba allowed it because mitzvah l'shmo b'divrei ames, because we want to honor the dead. How much more so in this case, what an honor it would be for the dead that his body is being used for the sake of medical science. And truth be told, that this is the, you know, the intuitive ethical sense that I think, at least in the West, is very common. Comes along the Noda B'Yehuda, his answer, and he can't believe that this great Shoel, this Rav HaMuflav HaMuflav, would have even raised such a Avon. He says, first of all, why do you need this whole pilpul with the Rashba and with Kovod HaMes? Why don't you just say it straight out that Pikuach Nefesh is Doche Kol HaTorah Kula? If you have a case where Nafal Avos HaGal, you don't know if the person is alive, you violate the Shabbos for the possibility that maybe he's alive. So, you know, don't beat around the bush. Why don't you just go straight away and tell me that it's Pikuach Nefesh? But the answer is, says the Noda B'Yehuda, that that's not what Pikuach Nefesh is all about. B'nidon didan, ein kan chole hatzarech lezeh. We don't know of the existence of a chole, maybe somewhere out in the, you know, the other part of the world, but here at least, there's no one who's suffering from this disease. But what? Rak gotzim lilmon chach mezu, ulai yizdamein chole shiyetzarech lezeh. Vadai, he says, without a doubt, we cannot violate even an Iser Kal, even an Iser Drabbanon for a chashash of this sort. This is not called Pikuach Nefesh. Pikuach Nefesh means Chole Lifanecha. You have two people. One person died, the second person is suffering from the same ailment. We might be able to save him by violating Nivel HaMes with regard to the one who passed away. But if you're telling me that in the future, now again, statistically, I don't know, I would argue at least that, you know, over the course of a century, depending on what the ailment is, you know, there will be another case. You know, you could work that out in statistics. But right now, we don't have any chola over here. He says, by the way, that if your logic is correct, then basically, there's so many things that we should be allowed to do on Shabbos, and basically call melechas harefuos, anything you do for the sake of refuah, like shchitkas and bishul samimonim, achanas kli ezmel, lakaza, everything should be mutar on Shabbos. You know, we're left with no Shabbos because you never know. Let's start heating up the water and sharpening the knives because somebody might get sick overnight. They'll call the EMT, you know what I mean? They'll call Atzalah. He says the answer is, that's not what Pikuach Nefesh is all about. We're not worried about some sort of chashash down the line. Pikuach Nefesh means there's an immediate emergency, life and death on the line. V'chalila lahatir davar zeh. He goes on.
What about the case where they say that you know, you can sign in the back of your driver's license if you allow your organs to be
donated
to somebody who needs a heart transplant or something like that?
I think
eventually that could happen.
I think, Eli, that the Noda B'Yehuda might be a little bit more liberal and open to that possibility. Why? Because if we have statistical probabilities that we can keep the heart going posthumously for X amount of time, whether it's a half hour, an hour, I don't know how long it is, and you're talking about a major, you know, there's a tremendous need for hearts. I mean, you know, I have a cousin who is, I mean, he's no longer alive, but he waited for a liver for about, I think it was 18 months, you know, and he had a liver. He lived for another few months after that on someone else's liver. My mechutin, that means my son-in-law's father, is living on someone else's heart for 11 years. And I think that maybe the Noda B'Yehuda would say that that's like chol lefanech. Again, you have to know the circumstances, but, you know, let's say...
When you're talking about a transplant, it's always quite a little funny.
Right, But Bobby, do you see clearly what I see? That that's not the Noda B'Yehuda. The Noda B'Yehuda is talking about medical research.
Yeah.
He's not poo-pooing the research. He's not saying, you know, who cares about research?
I'll ask another question. I don't know if the Rav was going to get there, but if the autopsy is L'Kovod HaMeis.
Right.
So, for example, we have a situation in Toronto here where people died, and it's not clear. There's a suggestion that they killed themselves. And if the autopsy can prove that they did not, that should be covered a mace.
Right. Oof, that's a tough one, Bobby. I don't know. You know, you're asking the wrong person.
From what we're seeing here,
intuitively,
I'll cover a mace. You know, if you want, even if he wants to be moved. So
intuitively, you know, I would agree with you 1,000%. I just don't, you know, I don't know what the post can say about it.
Yeah,
but
I'm not asking for psak. I'm just saying that.
But I would tell you intuitively something like that. You know, to determine the cause of death in a case of a suffering suicide, homicide, whatever it might be, I think that's definitely L'Kvodo Shel Mes. When my father died, by the way, during surgery, the surgeon wanted to do a very small incision into his body just to determine how much blockage there was in the main artery. Because, you know, these surgeons, again, maybe things have changed since my father's patira, but in those days, it was all based on an angiogram, which has a little bit of a recorded picture, but it's much different than seeing it in the... So here's one of the greatest heart surgeons in New York City who does, you know, X number of surgeries daily, but he wanted to know how blocked was the artery. You know, could my father have survived or not? And my brother-in-law was he was the posek, so to speak, on site. He said, absolutely not. You know, just to clarify, my father's gone already. That's it. You know, you can't bring him back to life right now. Now, I want to just be, I know we're running out of time, but just on the left side of the page, you have a tshuva from the Chassam Sofer. And the Chassam Sofer is bothered by the fact that the dialogue here, you know, back and forth between the Shoel and the Novdi Yehuda, seems to have overlooked a certain point. Not that this would change the psak, he says, but if you're talking about Nivel HaMes, that's not the beginning and the end of your issue. There's another element here that should be brought into the equation. Another Issur, which he says is an Issur d'oraisa, and that's called Hana min HaMes. Meaning, what you're going to do is you're going to take body parts out and study those body parts. And according to the Chassam Sofer, this is called a violation of Hana min HaMes. Now, how do you know? How does the Chassam Sofer know that Hana min HaMes is an Issur d'oraisa? And he says because Chazal derived it from the parsha of Tikrovus Avodah Zarah and Yayin Nesach. Because the pasuk calls it Zivchei Mesim. Now, the Issur of Hana with regard to Avodah Zarah is not only an Issur d'oraisa, but it mamish comes under Avodah Zarah. I don't even know if you're allowed to have benefits from Avodah Zarah in order to save life. I mean, that you have to know, because there's something called Avizrayu d'Avodah Zarah, and it's one of the big three. But certainly he says that if we derive from the parsha of Avodah Zarah that there's an Issur to have any Hana min HaMes, then, you know, this is going to be a real serious problem in the case of taking body parts and using them for study. He says that the Salkadaitik of the Shoel Ahi, he says the one who asked the question was thinking that this is a case of Pikuach Nefesh. Sheyilmedu arofim lilmod mimenu shoresh hamaka ahi kidei sheyedu lizor lahotzi trufa v'chayotzei. They should know how to administer drugs and so forth, or maybe how to do a surgery. In kenafilu yesh ha'asur hana mikomakom misrapim v'isurei hana. In other words, the Shoel was right in one sense. Again, his premise about Pikuach Nefesh was unacceptable. The Noda B'Yehuda at least didn't accept it. But nevertheless, according to Lashitasa, that he thought that this was a case of Pikuach Nefesh, that would be matir not only the Isur of Nivol Hames, which we're not sure if that's the Oraisa Drabbonon, but it would moreover be a violation of the Isur Hanom and Hames. And Rabosai, I'm very perplexed by this because I don't know that Hanom and Hames means that I use the mess to derive certain intellectual conclusions and learn certain wisdom about medicine. Is that called Hanom and Hames? He seems to be assuming that Hanom and Hames is like Hegdesh, which means even an indirect kind of Hanah is prohibited. So for example, if you walk by, you know, a temple of the idol worshippers and they're you know, they're burning incense, then you're not allowed to even have Hanah of Reach, even though normally we say, you know, Kol Mavrech Ein Bo Vishum Me'ilah, but here he's having some benefit from the Avodah Zarah. And here too says the Chassam Sofer is having some benefit from the body parts of the deceased, and that should be also unless you have Pikuach Nefesh. And therefore, Shuv Hitzrich Hanod Bihuda, he answered him that even as far as this is concerned, Ein Ze Bechlal Atzolz Nefoshos Kevon She'ein HaChole Lifanei. Since there's no...
Again, transplant, you would say, would be okay.
Once again, if it's chol lefaneinu, if we assume that, you know, there's a very good chance that within the next hour, you know, we're going to have a candidate. Today, people are waiting online. You know, they're waiting online for so many different organs. Again, you know...
This is a very good chance. They won't take it unless there is somebody. They won't take the body part unless there is somebody
true.
Already.
According to story concerned.
Okay, but
some things maybe, not everything.
Yeah. I think there is such a thing as storage. I'm not sure. Okay, I'm not a bucky on this, Bobby, but just to summarize, I think the Nodeb Yehuda would have to deal with different situations and determine exactly what's considered cholei b'faneinu. And I would not derive from this note of Yehuda that he's absolutely opposed to taking organs out of the body unless somebody right in front of you is about to die. There may be situations where we can still classify it as cholei b'faneinu. Now, what I want to leave you for the time being, let you go, but I just wanted to point out that there's a very important tshuva of the Binyan Tzion. You know, the Binyan Tzion was the Aruch Lanner. He was a Rav in Germany, but a great Talmud Chacham, a genius of geniuses. His one of his most famous students was Rav Shimshel Frol Hirsch. And he was also asked this question about a chole who became ill with a very rare kind of disease, and the Rofim were not able to save his life. And he says that there's another chole who has contracted the same disease, and therefore they wanted to open up the dead body of the deceased in order to see what's the nature of that chole, that disease, leman mitzo trufa, in order to find a benefit for the person who's actually sick, who's actually ill. And he immediately quotes the Nodeb Yehuda, and he says the Nodeb Yehuda was only machmir because there was no chole b'faneinu. And he says that l'chora there's room to be matir. However, it is a very interesting pilpul here. I'm not going to go into it right now, but it's not so simple. So anybody who has time, please take this with you if you can. Again, I don't know if you were able to print this out. I wanted to thank Rabbi Gladstein. I never met him, but he did a great job here collecting all these tshuvas, and he has here 30... something like 25 sources which he collected, of which we did about 10. So I wish everyone a great week, and I'm sorry to end on this sad note about, you know, autopsies, but it is
Joe asked,
you know, it's an important shot.
As quickly, Joe Zeichman asked that it be posted, the shiur be posted as quickly as possible so we can listen to it.
Alright, where is Joe today? Do we know?